Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest is San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea, our regular guest here on thesportsvirus.com. And this is part one of a two-part conversation. And then we'll have a tip from pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli, also a regular feature here on Inside China Basin. And John Shea joins us as the San Francisco Giants are getting ready for the second game of the three-game series against the Dodgers. And John, you know, what a matchup, first of all, tonight when you've got Clayton Kershaw going for the Dodgers, and he pretty much dominates the Giants, and Madison Bumgarner, who's one of the best pitchers on the planet as well. And both guys didn't get off to a good start this year, but you know, especially the Giants as a team not getting off to a good start. Do you think winning the first game of the series sets the tone a little bit, maybe gets them out of their doldrums a little bit?
Yeah, of course. You didn't want nine straight losses, you know, going into this game. I mean, this is wonderful drama. This is, you know, Koufax, Gibson, or Marischal, Koufax. And, I mean, this is the stuff that will keep everybody tuned to the game, everybody in their seat. You don't want to get up and miss either of these two guys. It's Mr. October against Mr. April through September, right?
I mean, right.
It's the guy who dominates in the playoffs against the guy who dominates in the regular season.
Exactly. And the way that things are going right now for the Giants, it could be a nice confidence boost. They already got one of those with Tim Lincecum pitching so well, and he's been pretty good so far this year. And you came out and said on an earlier podcast that he was going to be a big key to the season. And it's almost like, you know, he's got to be a stopper at this point. So what have you thought of him?
Well, when the season started, everyone said, hey, do you think this guy will be a good fifth starter? And I said, fifth starter? I think he's their third starter.
Right.
Because we had no idea about Peavy. We had no idea about Hudson or Kane. All we knew about was Bumgarner. So somebody had to emerge as the number two or three guy. And he's been pretty fantastic. He's pretty much located his fastball. He's much more in control of his breaking stuff. And even though the clock reads him at high 80s, It's effective because it's so off speed with his changeup, his slider, and you know all these pitches he throws to complement the fastball. So it's not the same old Lincecum, but it's a pretty effective one. And it's always been about whether he can command the stuff. He's not hanging pitches, and he's not blowing it by anybody. But it's the old trick that Hudson has used for years, and that's keep it on the ground. You know, if you look at his pitches, everything's, you know, waist below, knee below. So when you make contact on these pitches dipping in the zone, chances are you're going to hit a ground ball. And sure enough, four guys hit double play balls. And suddenly that's something that Lincecum's thinking about and says, well, yeah, I'm putting guys on base. And he even admitted the pitches weren't all that great. But if they keep them down in the zone and they hit ground balls with this infield, with, you know, maybe a couple gold glovers, who knows, with this infield, they're going to make outs. Though the one exception might be over at third base where Casey McGee is still a step slow.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for him to emulate Pablo, who, you know, even despite his weight, he always seemed pretty quick over there and nimble. But those guys up the middle, and now we're seeing these glove flip plays. And it's not like they're being fancy with the glove flip play. It's being necessary, and they have this in their bag of tricks, so to speak. I mean, and Joe Panik started it in the World Series, and we've seen Crawford do that before. I think he made one of those plays last year when he started a double play in the PV no-hitter, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was a glove flip.
Right.
Yeah, so these guys have been doing this, and Crawford said that it's not something they really practice so much, but they play around with it, and now it's becoming so commonplace. It's really fun to watch.
You know, I had a long conversation with Brandon Crawford in spring training about where does he draw the line between being fancy, to use your word, and being necessary, to use your other word.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it's all about being necessary. It's not about being fancy at all. While some shortstops, you just love to watch, whether it's Omar Vizquel or Ozzie Guillen, there's so much flair, so much theater, and with this guy, there is too. But he, you know, will take it to his final day by saying it's not about that at all. It's about getting the play, performed, make the play, stop the ball, throw the ball, get an out. But it just seems that. But then I said, well, wait a minute. In Double A, you made this video. And I don't know if you ever saw it. I'm sure you did, but it's of him making every trick play in the book, just kind of messing around on an off day. And he said that was kind of the result of just coming off the Arizona Fall League. They'd played months and months of consecutive baseball, and a lot of shortstops kind of got together and just kind of messed around and invented things. And so a local TV crew from his Double A team came out, Double A City came out, and film this stuff. It was highly entertaining. But he said the only time he ever, got a ball between his legs and flipped it in one motion was in high school, and he wasn't even thinking about that. He doesn't throw the ball around his back. He says it kind of defeats the purpose. But he said that play in Game 7 of the World Series, that 4-6-3, the panic flip to Crawford, would not have been a double play if he didn't show off some flair. Panic just didn't, flip it. And if he got up and put it over his head or got up to his knees, flipped it, he's going to be safe at first base. And same thing with the double play in the Lincecum game. If he doesn't flip it, if he gets up to his knees and flips it, it's not a double play. Remember, that was kind of bang, bang. And the throw was short hopped at first base.
So, right.
Yeah, you're right. That's a great way you put it. It's not about being fancy. It's about being necessary.
Yeah, and if we get entertained along the way, and as long as it's not being careless, I have no problem with it. It's sort of like Steph Curry. The minute he throws a behind the back pass that's picked off and it's a dunk the other way, then you start thinking, that's too cocky. But most of the time, I can't even recall him doing something like that. Most of the time, he is great theater, just like Brandon Crawford is. And maybe opponents may not like it so much, or opposing fans might say, that's a little cocky. But I don't think so. I mean, I'm just looking at it going, necessary stuff that he's doing, but he's so athletic, and this is athleticism that you don't see often.
Yeah, and in basketball and football, you have more of a forum to be a showman, to show off, to dance, to point, to move around. Whether you just made a three or whether you sacked a quarterback, there's always that a second or two where the camera is on you, where you can kind of dance a little. But you do that in baseball. It's kind of an unwritten rule thing. You just don't do it. You might have a pitch in your ear the next inning, and you don't want to go over the line at all. And Crawford doesn't. While he loves to look at replays of a fancy play he made, while he loves to look at other shortstops and study them and look at replays of maybe Gold Glove plays, he's still between innings 1-9, all business. Now, if you ever get there early to a game and watch infield, he'll kind of torment the infield coach, Ron Wotus. and he's been doing this for years. Usually the last few ground balls, he will take them between his legs, will throw them around his back, and then Wotus throws down his cap and acts like he's all upset. It's quite a comedy team. And there's sometimes where Crawford gets the ball and just like ping pong balls it over to second base, just won't even have any kind of possession. We'll just kind of ricochet it over to the bag, and then he'll look at Wotus, and Wotus will throw down the Funko and just kind of look at him with a stare. But it's all fun and games. I mean, I think Wotus really goes overboard to make sure that this guy is totally focused, because there are plays that Crawford makes that, maybe he does lack a concentration. You talk about Curry. He's so good and so confident. Well, sometimes maybe he's overly confident that this play is so easy that I'm just going to make it. I don't need the total focus. I don't need to give it my all, because I'm so good, I can get it done without that extra, energy factor or whatever it is, that extra focus. But that's what Wotus is trying to get out of Crawford.
or even extra preparation, because, you know, getting back to Lincecum and just the idea that he prepares more than he did before, and getting the ground balls, like you said, and ground balls seem to be, and this isn't anything new, it's not a revelation, but they seem to be really a priority now for the Giants organization, because, yeah, Lincecum's trying to get more of them. They have Tim Hudson. They've got Chris Heston, who's throwing a great sinker. He's getting ground balls. They've got a new kid named Tyler Beede, a first-round pick who's in San Jose, and he used to throw a four-seam fastball. Now he's throwing what he calls a one-seam fastball to try to get ground balls. So, I mean, this is really becoming where the Giants want most of their pitchers to be able to do that.
Well, for as much as outsiders might laugh at the Giants, saying they're not into sabermetrics at all, it's just the old school scouts smoking cigars and, you know, throwing darts up against a wall on draft day, there is a lot more calculations going on than maybe the average fan knows. They do have people who study the numbers. Jeremy Shelley is one of them. He was just promoted to assistant general manager. He's also over in the scouting department, kind of a double team kind of guy. So, you know, he has people working for him. I mean, there's no, when they picked up Aoki as a free agent, I mean, they looked a lot more than, well, here's a guy who might hit 300. I mean, they looked at his on base. They looked at his strikeout to walk ratio, his stolen base success rate, whether he could maybe fit in as the leadoff guy because Pagan has been injury prone the last 2 years. And the same with McGee. You know, they looked at McGee as a third baseman. Neither of those guys has the power from, you know, the Pablo and Morse years, but, you know, same thing. It's a better strikeout to walk ratio, better contact hitter, had more RBIs than those two other guys. So there is some, you know, some method to this madness of in the pitching as well. You know, like you say, ground ball pitchers. And with this up the middle defense that they have with Posey and the second baseman and the shortstop, you know, at least for the next 5 or 10 years, you know, why not bring in pitchers who get ground balls?
More with John Shea right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in Santa Fe. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
Well, since you mentioned Aoki, he's off to a great start. And I think, you know, it's a welcome relief for Giants fans and just everybody concerned, you know, Bruce Bochy, the staff, everybody, that they have somebody who's been consistently getting on base, because the offense has really struggled. And, yeah, the pitching hasn't been great altogether either. I mean, when you start out 4-10, but how much, John, do you try to not overreact in April? Everybody concerned. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody. I know I've been guilty of it. When you go into the first 2 weeks of the season, if you see a team like the Brewers and they're 2-11, or the Giants at 4-10, and you look at batting averages being under 200, everybody's just talking about it, and it's way too early. Those numbers are not going to be the average of the whole season, but we're also guilty of it. So how do you stay away from that? How does a team stay away from that?
Well, I like to use the eye test more than the stats test, because April numbers are like spring training numbers. They don't really matter. 2 years ago, in 2012, the Giants won it all. They started 1-4. They had a losing record through mid-May. I think they're 7.5 games back in late May. And by late June, a month later, they were in first place and won the division by 8 games. So the old cliche, it matters how you end, not how you begin. And with Hunter Pence out and with Kane out and with Peavy out and with McGee having the knee issue, Ishikawa we haven't even seen, you know, up and down the line. I mean, they benefited last year because, for the most part, they were healthy. No Kane, no Pagan. But with Bumgarner picking it up in October and just enough offense, they got it done. But now they have more injuries than they've ever had in this Bochy era to begin a season. So it'll be interesting how they deal with it. But I still like to look at the eye test more than the numbers test. And even, you know, you could say so many of these games they flunk the eye test, but still, an 8-game losing streak is terrible in the first 2 weeks. much worse than it would be in mid-June, but still, because you know you're so far back in the standings. But again, you can regain that, like you can improve a batting average in 2 weeks. You can climb back in the standings in an awful hurry because it's so early.
A lot of times you got to look at track record, and for sure Buster Posey isn't going to hit where he has been. And, you know, he's starting to, it seems like, swing the bat better. And Madison Bumgarner, he's not going to have a terrible season, you wouldn't think. He had a, you know, kind of a rough start to his year, but those are the kind of guys, I guess, you don't worry about. But when they are struggling a little bit and you have the injuries, that's got to make it really difficult for this team to win.
And you mentioned Buster. He was kind of alone in the lineup, kind of on an island. Last year, so many guys protected him, from Pablo to Morse to Hunter Pence, and now all those guys are gone. And, you know, we won't see Pence until early to mid-May at the earliest. So it's going to continue. And, yeah, he's been hitting a little better lately. With the last five games, he's had three two-hit games. And he's kind of a streaky hitter. He can get on a roll, but again, you know, he's a 300 lifetime hitter. You know, he's won a batting title. You know, he dropped down a few games ago to 219. Well, last April, for most of the month, he hit 219, and by mid-May he was hitting 300, and he finished 300 plus. So he's a 300 hitter, and probably always will be. He's kind of the Will Clark of the modern time, the modern era, the kind of guy who will get a double in the gap, he'll poke it down either line, he'll hit a bunch of pop-ups for base hits. Like Will, Buster doesn't have much speed, and it's all about just being a great hitter. And from the right side, he's kind of the equivalent of Clark.
We'll continue the conversation with John Shea in just a moment. Inside China Basin is sponsored by Angel Borelli, a nationally known expert on pitching mechanics from right here in the Bay Area. She works with some of the best pitchers in the Bay Area, troubleshooting and solving their performance issues. Listen to Angel Borelli's weekly podcast, The Fix, which discusses issues and solutions for pitchers from a sports science perspective. And get a weekly tip on pitching at Angel Borelli Pitching on Facebook. Check out our website, jimscience.com, where you can order her books and other publications. Contact Angel Borelli today. And don't forget, right after this podcast with John Shea, we'll hear a special pitching tip with Angel Borelli. As we finish up part one of this conversation, we started by talking about the matchup of Clayton Kershaw and Madison Bumgarner tonight at AT&T Park as we sit here on a Wednesday afternoon. When you look at Kershaw and the numbers against the Giants are just fantastic, do they need to change their approach against him at all? I mean, is he just one of those things where, you know, he's going to be great against most teams anyway? Yeah. What do you do in that case? And the other part of that, John, is Bumgarner has come out and said that, you know, he doesn't really think about it. He's pitching against the other guy, Kershaw. But is that really true? I mean, is that maybe hidden from us? I mean, you have to be thinking about it. And you're going to face him as a National League pitcher. You're going to go up there as a hitter. So you are thinking about it a little bit.
Yeah, especially in the National League. I think you always know who's on the other side on the mound, and especially if it's a big time presence, you know all eyes are going to be on you. But Bumgarner is a prime time performer. He's done it every October. He's been given a chance, and there have been some pretty hefty names thrown at him from the opposite dugout, and for the most part, he's prevailed. Now in the regular season, he hasn't. I mean, he's been great, but October is really his thing, whereas Kershaw is just the other way around. He kind of struggles, especially against the Cardinals, every October. So Kershaw is fantastic pretty much against every team. He just happens to be a little bit more fantastic against the Giants. And you remember all those Kershaw versus Lincecum games.
Yeah.
And now maybe we'll be treated to a lot more Kershaw versus Bumgarner games. I mean, that's thrilling stuff.
And our thanks to John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. And now it's time for our special pitching tip from Angel Borelli, a pitching mechanics expert, our sponsor here on thesportsvirus.com. And she'll join us every couple of weeks. And Angel, with the Giants right now, They've got these pitching injuries, and we talked about Matt Cain and Jake Peavy before, and I'm wondering just about the psychology of this. You've dealt with pitchers coming back, and you don't want to come back too soon. Matt Cain has never really had to deal with anything like this, where he's had to come back from an injury, and he comes back in spring training. It seems like it's going well, and then he's got tightness in his forearm, where Jake Peavy, I mean, he's had some issues physically. Maybe he knows a little bit more about coming back from this back problem, although he tried to come back, said he's okay, and then he's not okay. So how do you deal with pitchers and the psychological part of it?
Well, the psychological part is actually when a pitcher is being tentative or he's got a little bit of fear, it's usually because he has a lack of information. And the information that a pitcher needs in order to be really confident and go back and actually throw his maximum velocity, which is sometimes what you see in a pitcher who's had Tommy John, they'll say, gee, he looks like he's tentative. He's not throwing as hard as he could. What all those situations represent is that in the return to play process, which should be a very definitive process by who's ever handling it, and the way I do it with my guys is as I'm increasing their pitch count, and as we do training, we do things in the gym, we do things on the mound, every time you do something to benefit the body is giving feedback not only to the inside of the system, but to the pitcher's head. So never, ever are you dealing with just one thing at a time. And the system that you use to develop the body and to heal the wound and just get the pitcher back into whatever shape he needs to be in with regard to that injury, built into that is a feedback system to his brain saying, hey, I'm going to be okay. Which is why if the pitcher isn't successful on the mound in, let's say you send him back to the minors and he's in and out, you don't call him up to perform in the MLB. You don't put a pitcher on the mound unless you tested him out in bullpens, in the gym, not just with pitching, but with movements for, let's say, with PV, the back, to make sure that he has had so much testing that he has complete confidence that he is going to be able to play. So here's the deal. You do not use a mound appearance facing hitters for information. The pitcher should have had all the information and all the experience he needs to know, I am actually ready for this. In other words, he's pitched more than three times with high pitch counts and knows, hey, my back is okay. Or he has pitched all his pitches in a bullpen, hey, my forearm's okay. That way, the physical is feeding the psychological. It's just like when a pitcher gets the yips. Everybody calls the yips a mental thing. That starts with a physical problem, and it becomes mental. When you start to fix the physical, the mental starts to settle down. They go together. They're like a married couple. They both have to agree, and when they're in sync, they're in sync. And that is very important to the return to play process.
How much more challenging is it when you have a young pitcher, you know, an inexperienced guy, and he wants to go out there? I mean, he's trying to prove himself, and he's not Matt Cain or Jake Peavy, who's made millions of dollars. He wants to get out there and throw 100 miles an hour, and it's just not time. How do you deal with talking to that player?
Well, you know, very rarely do you have a pitcher who's saying he can do more than he can if it's an issue of post-surgery particularly, especially with Tommy John recovery pitchers. Now, they may want to return to play, but the body always is in control. In other words, the elbow is healing at the rate that it heals. If you're administering the right program, the pitcher's getting information that it's safe. But the pitcher is the one that's most hesitant to try to do more than he can do. However, there are times when he says, well, I think I'm ready to face hitters. And he can actually go out and have a decent outing, but come back and feel soreness. And then he realizes, okay, you know what? I need to, like, do some more bullpens before I actually have a start. Very rarely do I see a Tommy John returning pitcher try to speed up anything because the elbow is consistently speaking to that pitcher, and the pain that they go through when that injury occurs is something that they're usually not frivolous about. So that would be one injury that I would say that you wouldn't see that situation often. But when you do, and you have a pitcher that says, I'm ready, you say, okay, well, let's get in a bullpen today, throw all the pitches. We're going to have someone stand in. Maybe he's just standing in. We're going to go by innings, and you put that pitcher to the test in a way that isn't going to be on television, and you put him to the test, and then at the end of that, you ask him, now are you ready? So in other words, when he's saying he's ready, that's a good indication that he possibly is, and then your job is to test it out in the right environment so that he gets additional feedback and says, yes, I absolutely am. It's a good sign when a pitcher calls you up and says, hey, I think I'm ready to start throwing my pens. It usually means he feels better. But you always create an environment where the feedback comes to him first before he's on the mound facing hitters in a major league game.
Angel, thanks so much for the tips today. Look forward to more of these throughout the season.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joe.
That's pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. She'll be joining us every other week here on thesportsvirus.com. I want to thank her and John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle for coming on the podcast. And we'll have part two of the conversation with John on Friday. And then on Monday, looking ahead with the Giants playing the Dodgers quite a bit in recent games, Alana Rizzo, reporter for the LA Dodgers, will be our guest. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.